Along with smart grid, microgrid is the newest buzzword in the energy world. Basically, it's a little island of power lines coupled with its own source of energy that is still wired to the broader grid. They're not totally self-sufficient, but can generate their own electricity for short bursts when needed. Gordon Van Wiley, president and CEO of the regional grid operator, ISO New England, says microgrids can also save money.
But what they also do is they arbitrage between the wholesale market and their own generation. And so they sit there and they watch the price. They say, okay, what's the price in the wholesale market today? And then they say, what's my price for producing electricity myself? And then what they do is they buy more or less from the wholesale market, depending on the relative economics.
The other upside to microgrids is during big storms, being able to make your own power adds resiliency. If one of the big power lines going to the nuclear plant 60 miles away goes down, you've still got the line to the landfill methane plant down the road. But to have a microgrid, you need that local source of energy. In terms of what resource is genuinely everywhere and is being developed, the obvious answer is to look up at the sun. That's where Portsmouth startup Revolution Energy is working to carve out their niche in the solar market.
Look at that, Clay. We've made, that says megawatt hours?
Yep, 101 megawatt hours.
Yeah, that's awesome. So this is the sound of renewable energy.
It's quiet.
John Spencer and Clay Mitchell are showing off an inverter at one of their solar panel installations. Revolution has an interesting business model. It installs solar panels for schools and other institutions, and then sells the power from those panels to the school or institution through a set contract. At the end of the contract, usually 10 or 20 years, the ownership of the solar panel array transfers to the host. Meanwhile, Revolution handles the administrative work required to capitalize on state subsidies and passes part of the savings along to the host. This array is at East Kingston Elementary School.
Wait for it.
Oh, look, there's those.
Yeah, it all.
But it, now, the wastewater treatment plant, it was pretty much covered.
Yeah, but that's 25 degrees. This is 35.
Oh.
Spencer is excited because despite the snow and cold in the week prior to our visit, the heat generated by the panels has caused the snow to slide right off. Standing in front of the panels, Clay Mitchell debunks a common misconception. There's not enough sun in New Hampshire for solar panels to make financial sense.
So there are three variables at play when somebody makes a comment about whether solar works in New England. And the three variables are how much sun falls on the device, how efficiently the device converts the sunlight to electricity, and what's the economic value of that electricity once it's produced. The result is dollars per sunlight. When you calculate those three numbers together, it turns out that the amount of value from a solar array is higher in New Hampshire than Arizona.
Mitchell says that shocks a lot of people. There might be more sun in the desert, but with our high energy prices, that sun is worth more in New England. So solar has as good a chance of succeeding here as anywhere else. Many opponents of other types of energy, nuclear, coal, wind, hydro, you name it, point to solar as the lowest impact source of electricity. But solar panels aren't exactly springing up all over the state. Government data show that photovoltaics account for 0.2% of the state's electricity, putting us right on track to meet the renewable goals which took effect in 2008. This is partly because they're still more expensive than energy from the grid. New Hampshire does offer subsidies based on a market system of renewable energy credits, but Mitchell and Spencer say the Granite State has set up the market in such a way that the subsidies are relatively small.
So our top level is 55, and Massachusetts' lowest level is 285.
Are you going to do business in Massachusetts or business in New Hampshire?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd rather do business in New Hampshire, but it just isn't.
Just over our border to the south, where public policy and public spending has been more aggressive in supporting indigenous energy, there is 60 times as much installed solar capacity. However, 60 times almost nothing is still pretty small in the scheme of things, just short of 200 megawatts. That's about 1.5% of that state's peak demand. So it's still not clear to what degree New England as a whole is moving in this direction, according to grid operator Gordon Van Wiley.
Rapidly as it has been occurring, you're still only accounting for thousands of megawatts.
But if there were a concerted move toward microgrids, he says this change foreshadows a big challenge for utilities, maybe even an existential challenge. People will still want to be connected to the grid for whenever they need energy, but will be using it a lot less. That means there'll be less money in the pot for maintaining the power lines. But Van Wiley thinks those kinds of changes are a long way off, and he isn't convinced they'll ever go mainstream.
I think the economics of large-scale energy production are still going to beat sort of small-scale distributed energy production. Those economies are still going to stay tilted in favor of large-scale energy production.
In other words, with energy prices where they are, driven down by the natural gas boom, it's likely that the only way any state will move towards microgrids is if policymakers decide it's a priority. And that's not totally out of the question. In Connecticut, after Snowtober and Irene left millions without power, the state set up a grant program to help towns developing, you guessed it, distributed generation and microgrids. For NHPR News, I'm Sam Evans-Brown.